Blog Talk Radio.
In much less detail, the podcast, where we cut through the noise and give you your NFL breakdown in much less detail. Here are your hosts, Jay and Dre.
All right, there, I was on mute. It is In Much Less Detail, the podcast. We are live. Dre just got on the show. He was eating dinner as we were getting ready to go live here, so he's taken another one for the team, had more problems with his bowling. This has just become, you know, I guess it's better to have problems with bowling than with the Blog Talk Radio, but we are live. This is the Week 2 NFL recap. It's Wednesday, September 19th, 2018, 10 p.m. Central Time. I am Jay. Dre is eating away, getting ready for the show. Well, another wild week in the NFL. I was at one of the wildest games, probably the most controversial game if you follow any of the press with the way that the rules are being applied in the league. I got to see it all live. I have to say that with the speed of the game and as you're watching the ball come out of these quarterbacks' hands, you're really not paying a lot of attention to what's happening to the quarterback after the ball is let go. So unfortunately, you have to pick up a lot of this from just the fact that you think you've seen something amazing, and then the refs walk, you know, and the ref just cuts in through the loudspeaker and the PA system and announces that there's a penalty. And you're like, oh, okay. And then you wait for the scoreboard to replay it. And the scoreboards aren't doing too good of a job of showing anything that might call into question some of these calls. And it seemed like every time there was one of these late hit calls on the quarterbacks, we had three of them in this game between the Vikings and the Packers that I was at. Every time it went up to the Jumbotron, it cut out like right as the guy was about to get hit. So of course I had to wait until after the game to see what all the big deal was about. And it was pretty much what I expected. You can't touch the quarterback anymore. It's basically what it's come down to in the game of football. And Dre, how's dinner? Did we lose him?
Yummy.
Oh, there you go. You're there.
I mean, I was trying to mute and make sure I wasn't smacking into everybody's ears. How you doing, everybody?
So you're around. So another interesting week.
Yeah, you got the story of the week. It's perfectly fine that I'm running late again because my janky-ass bowling alley again breaks down again while we're bowling again and has me running completely late. But I did make it in just right before the show started to be able to log in before any real connection issues could arise. That's the real key to Blog Talk Radio. We've learned now is getting in as early as possible to make sure we don't have any issues. So I'm here, you're here, we're all connected, but this really could be your hour-long show tonight because I don't really have much to say about what happened, even though I watched the whole game too here. It happened to be the local game here in Memphis. So I got my thoughts about it, but I definitely wanted to have you spin your tale of the being the man on the scene and being there live to witness a game that had about 1,000 different points of interest.
Yeah, well, you know, as far as the actual X's and O's of the game goes, what it boils down to for me is that was a 20-7 game going the Packers way going into the fourth quarter. And that the fourth quarter just by itself was just complete mayhem. You had the Packers who had bottled up Kirk Cousins and the Vikings for 3+ quarters, basically couldn't stop anything. They give up a 75-yard bomb, get the top taken off the defense by Stephon Diggs. They let Adam Thielen make a miracle catch at the goal line in basically double coverage. The ball's going through like the arms of two defenders and basically threads a needle to get into Thielen. I witnessed the 2-point conversion attempt because I was looking right down the tunnel, right at that corner of the end zone. And you know, when you see these things on TV, I don't think you could appreciate how precise and how amazingly accurate some of these throws can be. Because the fade route into the corner to Stephon Diggs on the 2-point conversion, it was indefensible. Nobody could have stopped that play. The throw was perfect. Didn't matter where the defender was. It was basically just a pitch and catch. And if the throw was in the right spot, it was going to go in. And that just shows you the quality of having a quarterback who can drop in a throw with that much precision and that much touch. And Kirk Cousins, for as horrible as he played, and tried to play horrible in the fourth quarter through a pick, although the pick that he threw went right through the receiver's hands. I think that was Treadwell, who caught on a slant, and the ball basically hits him right on the hands in stride, perfect throw, and pops up in the air, and the Packers get a pick there. There were four or five or six different times in that fourth quarter. Being at the game, it was over. You had that final moment where it was just I could imagine Wayne Larrabee up there probably four times doing his dagger call, you know, because it felt like every time things would go the Packers' way, there'd be another and another and another chance for them to completely ice away the game. And it never really went to fruition. Then they have Crosby misses the field goal at the end of regulation. Then they go into overtime, and it's just a complete, you know, the Vikings go down, miss their field goal, you know, and again, you're tweeting about the icing the kicker. They were both doing it to each other. McCarthy and the Vikings were both icing each other's kickers, and it worked every time. Every time the Vikings would line up for one of their game-winning kicks, McCarthy would call the timeout. And then every time, when the Packers had their chance to win the game, there comes the timeout. It's like, oh, boy. Okay, so this is the way it's going to be. And then the Packers get their only drive of the overtime, take a great drive down to about the 35-yard line. You're thinking, okay, this is long field goal range. Just don't screw up. And they screwed up. So from that point, at the 35-yard line, Aaron Rodgers, it looked like he was going to go on a keeper, almost like a read option, and it looked like he was going to keep it and then just dropped it and had to fall on top of it and then took a sack on third down. It was very Matt Ryan-esque, that final drive that the Packers had in the overtime. So then they end up punting the ball away, and then the Vikings just waltz right down the field and blow the field goal. So you end up with this 29-29 tie. Now, the whole thing of this game for me was being at a tied football game, because a lot of people don't get that opportunity. It was bizarre. I mean, the feeling, you know, of being in the stadium, you've got a lot of Vikings fans and all the Packers fans, everybody yelling at each other. It's just, you know, just piss vinegar. Oh, you guys suck. You guys suck. There's some language, foul language going around in the stadium, and people are pointing and taunting. And when they missed that last kick, it's like everybody, all the air was just let out of the stadium. Everybody just kind of looked at each other and was like, okay, I guess it's time to go.
Yeah, no. Are you what, not what entertained?
You can't taunt the other team. They can't taunt you.
Right. You and, suck. Yeah. You tie. You suck. You tie.
Yeah. So then you just have that this feeling. It's just this stillness. It was the quietest walk. I mean, because it's a decent, three quarters of a mile walk back to the car. Brutally hot day. It was 87, 88 degrees. It was a really hot ball game. We were in the sun for a good half of it. You're just walking, and I just keep commenting. My wife and I are commenting to each other, just how weird. It didn't matter how many times you have to tell somebody or be told that, yes, a tie is better than losing statistically. And in the standings, a tie will always win you a tiebreaker because you had one less loss than the team that you'd potentially be tied with at the end of the season. But it just didn't feel like you basically felt like you sat there for 3.5 hours for nothing.
Well, and you kind
of
did.
It was just, yeah, it was just sort of this just empty, especially as tense. And, you know, you're waiting for the finality of it. You just knew the Vikings were going to kick the field goal. And, okay, well, the Packers, they fought hard. And Aaron Rodgers did it, you know, did it again, limping around on one foot and jumping around back there. And they made a few good plays, actually made a few plays running the ball, kind of just surprised mm-hmm. the Vikings a few times, took off running. I think more just to show them that he could versus any kind of a strategy where that was his intent. But hey, if it was there, he was going to take off. And in a couple of times, he was still with one leg faster than the guys that were chasing after him. We noted that to a Vikings fan who was sitting right by us, like, yeah, you know, a quarterback with one leg, he's running faster than your defensive guys.
That's,
it was all
the guts of Aaron Rodgers continues to amaze me. I was watching one of those runs. I definitely wanted to get your vantage point on that. I think maybe the first time he scrambled for a first down, the next play he hands it off, and he on camera, I definitely noticed him turn away as he was handing off, as if his leg was about to buckle and collapse. And I don't know if you had noticed that.
He was gingerly walking around a few times in the game. Every time he would get sacked or any time there was a pile up around the quarterback, you just were like, you know, you had that, oh no,
mm-hmm.
this is the one. But he got up every time. He limped around a little bit. He had the huge brace on the knee, which I kind of, you know, wasn't too shocked to see.
Right.
But yeah, it's an for an MCL strain for what he's got going on. That is, to play through that, you know, give them all the credit. They should have won the game, but yeah, it was defensive lapses in the fourth quarter, which you kind of know with the Packers, it was like, okay, when were they going to show up against a class team, you know, and the Vikings, you know, the Vikings aren't this bad and the Packers aren't this good, it's all going to even out, and it evened out in the ultimate way. It was a tie. The big play, obviously, that was all talked about was the Clay Matthews play. If you were eating and didn't hear me talking about that, I didn't really see it because it was a long bomb. So as soon as the ball leaves Kirk Cousins' hands, you're tracing the ball.
Okay.
You know, so it's intercepted, actually. So that's the ball game. The ball game's over. Everybody's cheering.
Dagger!
Yeah. You know, game's over, and then, you know, you get the ref on the PA, you know, personal foul, you know, and so I'm thinking, oh, okay. You know, Matthews is a step too late again. It's very similar to what happened against the Bears. And then they cut up to the Jumbotron. And it was weird because the replay cut off right as Cousins let go of the ball. But I'm watching them like, okay, Cousins is letting go of the ball, and Matthews is already in his rib cage. So what am I missing here, right? So after the game, you know, you got the post game on the radio because it takes forever to get out of this parking lots and everything. And they're talking about how it was one of the, well, you know, he laid on him or he drove him into the ground. And then you actually go and you watch the replay and he didn't really do either.
Nope.
Because, you know, Cousins put so much into that throw. He was pretty much airborne at the point when Matthews hit him. And then Matthews did his damnedest not to lay on him.
Yeah.
He actually went out of his way to prop himself up so that he didn't lay on Kirk Cousins. And then the NFL doubles down this week and goes, yep, we're going to, that's textbook, exactly what they should be calling. So it's official. You can't touch the quarterback anymore. You can't hit him high, can't hit him low, and you can't hit him in the middle.
That's very limiting. I don't know what that leaves you.
Yeah. It's funny because I'm watching the promos that they're cutting right now for NFL Network, because they're going to be doing a Football Life with Lawrence Taylor.
Oh God!
Every single highlight they showed of Lawrence Taylor is a penalty.
The
in
following
NFL.
Film is rated TVMA for the gratuitous violence you're about to see. Lawrence Taylor highlight.
Driving the quarterback into the ground, laying on the quarterback. I mean. Everything
that's
that
what I'm saying,
by
today's
one of
standards.
The greatest, he's one of the greatest of all time, but if he was playing today, he'd be a cheap shot artist.
Right. By today's standards, a Lawrence Taylor highlight film is like violent imagery.
Yes. Yes. In today's NFL, Lawrence Taylor is Vontaze Burfict.
Pretty much.
And it's just funny that I'm watching these highlights, and even NFL Network or anybody who are showing all these highlights, it's like, do they just not get the hypocrisy of what they're showing?
I think they get it, and they really don't care, because we all know why.
Yeah. So that was my take on the game. You know, none of that stuff, none of the shenanigans at the end of the game have to happen if the Packers actually play a little defense in the fourth quarter, which they didn't. But the Vikings are clearly the more talented team. We got one of the cheapest covers I think you can ever get.
And it's my lock. Well, thank you.
And your lock. Yeah. So cause you know, you're thinking there's multiple moments that the Packers, it's sewn up. It's over. And for it to ultimately end up in the tie, I guess it was the perfect ending to a game that was that back and forth. Especially late, that was like that, even though the Vikings never led.
That's right.
Never led at all in that game. And, you know, I thought but the Packers, to have it sewn up that many times, to have to settle for a tie there where they clearly could have gone up 2-0 in the division, it hurts them both. But you know, with the Bears 1-1, you know, the Lions 0-2 now, you know, that's still going to be – it's still a race in that division. Obviously, it's only 2 weeks by, but the Packers, I guess, did what they needed to do. They haven't lost yet, neither have the Vikings. They're undefeated.
Part of why it was such a strange game is because for all those opportunities the Packers had to put it away, you're absolutely right. At the same time, if the Vikings had a place kicker once again,
mm-hmm.
they would have won the game easily. So,
well, Crosby had the first shot. The game doesn't go to overtime if Crosby takes care of his business. Now, granted, it was a 52-yard field goal, but that goes through the uprights. It's 32-29, and we don't have any of the stuff happening. The kicker for the Vikings still has a job. So,
maybe not.
he shouldn't be sending any Christmas cards to Mason Crosby.
Hey, he nailed it the first one, except the timeout canceled it. So.
It was a low kick, low driving kick. I didn't think he had. And then, of course, it goes through and everybody's cheering. And then the ref runs out, you know. Day late and a dollar short. Oh, wait a minute. They called timeout. It's, jeez.
Don't anyone ever tell me it doesn't fucking work. Those last second timeouts, they absolutely sometimes work.
They worked three times in that game.
Yeah, and some people say that it doesn't work, and I've of course heard over the years, they need to abolish it. They need to make that illegal because it never works anyway. Don't fucking tell me it never works. It doesn't work all the time, but it absolutely does work some of the time.
Well, it's just it doesn't mean that it didn't. It doesn't necessarily work or not work. The first kick, the timeout had been called. So yes, had the timeout not been called, the game would have been over. But he still had to go out and make the kick.
Well, that's my point. I'm not saying necessarily that Crosby choked on the second one. I'm just saying
it
worked.
It's not easy.
Yeah, it was
easy to kick
a
ball 156 feet. We'd all be doing it.
Right. It was a difficult kick, and to make someone try it twice as opposed to once, that's what you want. You don't want them to get the one shot and nail it. If you can make them try it twice, make them try it twice.
Sure.
I got a lot of thoughts about this game. I'm probably going to stumble over most of them because I'm a little frazzled from running in as late as I did, but great job of hosting the first 20 minutes. I knew you had a lot of vantage points and stories about that game, because that was an event that you attended.
2 weeks in a row, the Packers are in sort of the game of the week, I guess.
Yeah, the game that everyone was talking about, no doubt about that. First of all, I would be remiss to the low-hanging fruit, again, the second name of our show, Kings of Non-Sequitur, should also be low-hanging fruit. I would be remiss if I pass this opportunity up to say that Donovan McNabb is out there at Lambeau Field waiting for them to continue the game.
Hey, hey!
Had to take that.
Wow.
Yeah, low-hanging fruit. I have
2 weeks in a row.
He's waiting around. He's looking around at all these ties going, what's going on out here, man? Why aren't they still playing the game? Hello, you played to win the game. Second of all, LeCron.
Hello?
There it is.
You play to win the game.
Herm was a little late coming, but there he was. Second of all, Treadwell, he's lucky that that kicker was not the only person cut after that game. Because that kid...
he had a bad game.
He's not an NFL receiver. He might have... he may be Tavon Austin right now. He might have a lot of tools and a lot of speed and a lot of athletic ability, but he doesn't have the hands to be an actual receiver. So that's pretty clear to me. That was bizarre. The most bizarre thing to me maybe is still how well Aaron Rodgers is playing with a clearly torn ligament in his knee. I don't care what they want to tell me. I don't care what reports that they choose to release or not release or what they want to call it, a strain or sprain or what. Dude tore something in his knee. I'm sorry. He just did. If you were a baseball player, he'd be out for the next 2 months minimum. If he were a basketball player, he'd be out for the next 2 months minimum. But he's a football player, and they let football players play through anything they want as long as they're willing to go out there and put their bodies on the line. So good on Aaron Rodgers, I guess, for showing the guts to play through it. But he's clearly hobbled. He's clearly injured. His knee is clearly damaged. And I remember the words that were coming out after the Bears game in which he got hurt. They were using the words "can't damage anymore." That Rodgers claimed that the doctors told him he could not damage the knee more by going out and playing. That's why he went out and played and beat the Bears in that unbelievable comeback. And now today I read that he's talking about, yeah, I'm worried about damaging it more the more that I play.
Huh?
Something doesn't add up there. What you lied one of the 2 weeks. Either you lied just now or you lied back in week one when you beat the Bears. But obviously something's going on there that they don't want to release exactly what the injury is, and they don't want to have that hanging over them that they're sending a quarterback out there with a clearly damaged ligament in his knee, torn ligament. To what degree, I don't know because I'm not a doctor, but I'm pretending to be a doctor by saying that he has a torn ligament because it's obvious the way he's running around out there.
I wouldn't be surprised if Aaron Rodgers suddenly isn't able to suit up, not necessarily this week at Washington, but maybe the next week against Buffalo. Maybe you let him rest a week.
I don't know how that's going to go, taking a week off and then coming back. I don't know if that's going to help too much. I get the feeling more that when he sits down, it's going to be for the rest of the season, but it's not going to be, if he can help it, it's not going to be anytime soon. It's going to be the moment that they're eliminated from any kind of playoff contention, he'll sit.
Ah.
That may not happen until week 15. I understand that the Packers are not going to go anywhere anytime soon. They're not going away. But the moment the season is out of reach, he's done. And before that, the moment that he just can't take it anymore and he crumples to the ground and can't stand back up, he'll be done.
Yeah. No, I'm suspecting re-injury or further injury is going to do him in.
Yeah, that sounds about right, that he's going to take a step and go down, and he's not going to be able to stand back up.
Or he'll blow out the other knee because he's favoring the left one so much. That kind of stuff can happen. Exactly, yeah. No, he's definitely getting the Ohtani treatment right now. They're just going to run him out there till he's dead.
Just send his ass out. And that's on him. He gets the credit for being so gutsy to do it. He also gets the blame for if he damages himself further and winds up like never the same player after this year. Because clearly he needs to sit down and have somebody take care of that thing and make sure that it's healed up. The prudent thing, what I don't know is the grade of strain or what have you, that it might be something that he could sit out the next 2 months and it'll heal and he'll be ready to come back fully at full strength by, say, week 13, 14, 15. The risk of that is Deshaun Kizer and your season's over. And that's why he's going out there. And I completely understand that. But I'm just saying, he's not right. He's gutting through it, and there's two games that he's played at an unbelievable level gutting through it. I just don't know how long he can keep that up.
Yeah, I mean, let's just be, you know, the reality is that without Aaron Rodgers, the 1-0-1 becomes 0-2.
I don't think I can argue that at all.
Yeah, there's no comeback against the Bears. They would not have beaten the Vikings with Deshaun Kizer. This is an 0-2 worst in the division football team. Them and the Lions would be going at it for last place at the moment if it wasn't for that. And we'd have the Bears would be sitting pretty at 2-0.
that's very strange as well.
Yeah.
So you gave some of your thoughts on the other quarterback on the field, Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
And I was mostly impressed by the comeback effort because he made some throws that you already talked about, the throw to Thielen for the touchdown that I have no fucking idea how that ball got through those two Packer defenders into Thielen's hands. It was like a video game.
I was looking right down the goal line. I was on the back line of the goal line, and so it was right on the opposite side of the field from me. And when I saw that ball coming in towards Thielen, and I saw the two Packer defenders there, I was like, that ball game. You know, that's getting picked, and it goes through all the traffic, and then Thielen's laying in the end zone with the ball. I'm like, what the – how?
Yeah. That was incredible. The comeback effort, he finally started taking advantage of some of those less-than-impressive Packer defensive backs. Give Green Bay credit for their front seven pressuring him before that for the first half and some of the second and not giving him too much time to operate. But once he got into comeback mode and turned it on, Laquan Treadwell's drops notwithstanding, he made some incredible throws and some incredible plays. And it wasn't just Thielen, of course. It was Stephon Diggs had the 75-yard home run.
That was a beautiful throw.
Yeah. So the weapons are there. We always knew the weapons would be there. The effort from Cousins is there. The consistency is still a little bit of a problem, but that's always going to be an issue with him. If he had that arm and was much more consistent, he wouldn't have been a fourth round pick. He would have been a first round quarterback. So
yeah,
you know, you expected the spotty consistency, but you can't deny the arm. You can't deny the talent.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, we keep waiting for Kirk Cousins to kind of Kirk Cousins things up. He tried on the roughing the passer call at the end of the game. That was a ball that was sort of just thrown up into the face of a rush and just kind of thrown out there. And it was not – it landed, you know, it was 5 yards past the receiver right into the deep safety's hands. So it was the play that should have ended the game, but there's the penalty. So he did do the Kirk Cousins thing. He did it with the first interception, but the Packers couldn't capitalize. And that was the thing, is they kept giving the ball to the Packers, and the Packers kept having to settle for field goals. Although they had scored a touchdown on one of the plays where you thought the game was iced, and that got called back on a holding call. And it's just like, they just couldn't over the hump. They just couldn't get that final blow, that kill shot into the Vikings. They just couldn't do it. They couldn't. The Vikings were like the zombie. They just kept coming back, and that's what the better team usually does. They just couldn't keep them down. And they should have won. The Vikings should have won the game.
The Packers and the Vikings should have won the game.
Both should have won the game. Everybody, it's a tie. So, well, there were 14 other games, unless you had some more thoughts on that one. We want to talk about that whole game for an hour.
I could laugh at the kicker who got cut, but
two kickers got cut.
He wasn't the only one. Zane Gonzalez in Cleveland is also looking for a job.
Yeah, and then another team that's they on the call. Cleveland should have won again.
Oh, those Browns! You talk about Cousins gonna Cousin. How about Browns gonna Browns? How do you blow
Browns
that?
Gonna
how do you blow that game.
Because they can't kick. I was more stunned about the fact that they held the Saints down as much as they did, that the defense showed up again.
Something's going on with the New Orleans Saints. That's two very lackluster home games to start the schedule out, and I'm feeling very nervous as the man that picked the Saints before the season ever began.
It's a long season.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long season.
What's wrong with the New Orleans Saints? Yeah, it's two games. Everybody in the league, pretty much with the exception of the Cardinals, can say it's two games. You know, we'll figure it out. We'll get it together. The Cardinals look like they're not trying to get it together. That looks horrible right now.
Yeah, you know, and so yeah, that's done. Right? Wait. Uh oh.
The Card. Wait a minute. You declared the Bills done. And now the Cardinals are they both Brady Quinn done?
Now I'm done.
I am more apt to say the Cardinals are probably just going to end up benching Sam Bradford and going to Josh Rosen sooner rather than later. So I will hold out on the Cardinals because there's still talent on that team. Sam Bradford with the 3.3 yards per attempt. He had 17 completions for 90 yards.
Just keep getting that completion percentage up, kid.
Yeah. Now, granted, the Rams are in another level right now. So that's two blowouts in a row for that team. So they are clearly firing on all cylinders. And that was a game I didn't expect to say too much about. But, yes, I think Sam Bradford is the one who's going to be exiting stage right here. So I'm not going to necessarily say that the Cardinals are done. Now, the Cardinals are terrible. I don't think they're going 0-16, but they're not going to be, you know, relevant. So are they done as far as like their season's probably over? Yeah, their season's probably over. I mean, they could still muddle 5 or 6 wins out of this. You never know. They still get to play Seattle twice. So there's still hope for them yet there.
I don't even have the words for the terrible, terrible blocking that I saw on both primetime games. Yeah. It's not like I saw something magical that only I could see. Everybody saw how horrible.
By the way, I needed those primetime games. Those games salvaged my week.
Some horrible blocking by the Giants, the Seahawks. They were terrible. Yeah, 9-7 for me in week 2, 7-9 for you. With those two primetime games, you went from 5-9 to 7-9, and I lost both of those. So yes, you absolutely needed those two. Those are big for you.
Yeah, because I gave you the one on the Thursday night, and then I only gave one back to you out of the 7 that we disagreed with, and it was looking a lot worse going into Sunday night. So yes, I absolutely needed those. And before we have a party for the Bears and this new dominant defense, I don't want to shit on you guys, you Bear fans. I don't want to do this. I just want to give you a logical reminder that you have played the two worst offensive lines in football. The last two weeks.
Giants may beg to differ. Wait a minute.
The Packers.
Wait a minute.
And the Seahawks. Okay. Bad. I'll go back. Two of the worst. How's that? Maybe not 31-32, but maybe 30-31 or 30-32 or some combination thereof. But the Packers and the Seahawks have two of the worst pass blocking teams, offensive lines in football. Neither team can run the ball. I mean, so it made sense that Khalil Mack and that Bears defense and everybody was just teeing off. And that went about the way. I can't call that a bear whisper because they were the favorite. I was riding on the Bears on Monday. I have Seattle in last place this year.
They are bad. And Russell Wilson, I don't know why he's not making decisions quicker than he is. He seems like he's
guys can't get open.
Then take off. Don't just stand there and wait for the other team to come eat you. Just get out of there. It's like he's just standing there waiting for something.
They have no offensive weapons. They can't run. Their receivers are basically just are all slow. They got rid of Paul Richardson. Seattle has nobody open. So Russell Wilson, who's he going to throw it to? I mean, basically, I guess just throw it away. Throwing it away rather than taking the 8 or 12-yard sack.
They have one fast receiver left, and it's Tyler Lockett, but the Bears did a good job of pretty much double and triple covering him all night, except for
they
that one
nothing.
Touchdown throw.
It's going to be a long season in Seattle.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. While I eat my cookie for dessert after my dinner, I'll give you the three topics that I put up on our show page, and then you can choose which one that you want to talk about. We had a possible changing of the guard in Jacksonville with their win over the Patriots. We have a possible new league superstar after 2 weeks with the way that Patrick Mahomes has come out playing for the Chiefs. And we got the old journeyman socialist quarterback turnover Bernie Sanders just swaggering and soaking it all in down in Tampa Bay. So what stood out to you in week two?
Well, I guess I'm going to talk about the one that was the most impressive to me. That's that Chiefs offense. I'm not just going to call it Patrick Mahomes because he's clearly the guy. You know, Andy Reid has just got to be laughing that he's got this guy, the smile on his face for the offense that they have been able to put out there. But it's fitting him in with the rest of those players. You have Tyreek Hill, who's like one of the best, if not the best playmaker in the league. He had an all right day against Pittsburgh, but it turns out that everybody's so focused on Hill because he demolished, whoever they demolished in week one. It just seems to be this week after week thing with the Chiefs. It was the Clippers. So in week two, all of a sudden you have Sammy Watkins, and you're like, oh wait, I forgot they had Sammy Watkins. And you got Patrick Mahomes finding Sammy Watkins, and he's running around and making huge plays, and Kelsey's making. They almost had three receivers go over 100 yards in that game, and then just to top that all off, just for shits and giggles, they've got Kareem Hunt in the backfield, and now the defense is really bad for the Chiefs as well. So what we saw with them in Pittsburgh, we're probably going to see a lot. Their first game, I want to say, was like 38-28. This was 42-37. It's going to be a lot of high flying football from the Chiefs this year, but they're going to be a hell of a lot of fun. And Mahomes is just, boy, he just slings it. He had no fear, zero fear throwing that ball. I mean, and he's on time to these guys. He's letting go of the ball, and these receivers, he's hitting them right where he needs to, where the defensive backs haven't even had a chance to turn around and adjust to the play yet.
Wait, what, the ball's here? What? When,
yeah.
How'd that happen? Wait a minute.
And, yeah, and then not only to get up big, to get up to 21-0 on Pittsburgh, and then they were supposed to be up 28-0, but then you had the refs, hit the keep scores close button, and because you could throw a defensive hold on it, wait, we can't have this be 28-0 on the road at Pittsburgh. Yep. Holding defense, yeah, okay. So, Pittsburgh gets all the credit, all the momentum, comes back all the way, ties the game at halftime. It didn't matter. First play after the first play of the third quarter, he was back at it again, hits Tyreek Hill on one of those perfectly thrown balls where the defender is still running down the field with his back to the play, and Hill's already got the ball in space, and it's just – it's a track meet, and throws six touchdowns in his second game. 10 in the first 2 weeks. So to me, that was the biggest story, even over Jacksonville beating New England, which wasn't stunning. Good for them. I'm glad they did it, but that defense is so good. And then Ryan Fitzpatrick with Tampa, and I watched the highlight package. And again, that's another one of these teams where even just competency at the quarterback position, there's so many weapons in that passing game, but then the fact that he did it against the Eagles was what really sort of was like, whoa, he's in the zone. This isn't going to last, but he is clearly in the zone. So they got to ride that for as long as they know. To me, it's a guy making basically his third NFL start. on the road in Pittsburgh just lit that team up.
It's obvious that Andy Reid got his new toy in Pat Mahomes, and he's running his offense completely different than when he had Alex Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to dust off that part of his playbook that he used to have with Donovan McNabb in Philadelphia. And he gets to call a bunch of different plays and routes now that he didn't have the ability to call with Alex Smith, who doesn't have the strongest arm in the world. And it's obvious that Andy Reid is just enjoying the hell out of having that aspect again. I wondered how long he was going to take to sort of open it up like that with this kid being so new and such a rookie with only one start under his belt coming into the season. So I was kind of wondering, would he hold back? Would he try to be a little conservative? And he's letting this kid jump right in feet first these first 2 weeks. He's really not holding back in letting him make the decisions and do what he wants to do. So Reid clearly has a lot of confidence in him. And that's big. That means a lot to me observing them, because Andy Reid is reminiscent of Bill O'Brien to me. When Bill O'Brien has quarterbacks such as Tom Savage and Brock Osweiler, guys that he doesn't trust to throw the ball 2 feet, much less 20 yards, it's a totally different game plan. It's a totally different coaching scheme. Everything is completely different. But then he gets Deshaun Watson and he sees what he's capable of and he goes, whoa, all right, now I can open it up. Now I can do some things, play calling, that I couldn't do with these other stiffs. And Andy Reid is the same way. He's got Alex Smith out of there. And Reid is a Hall of Fame offensive mind. I think he's going to be a Hall of Fame coach someday. He tailored his game plans to Alex Smith and they had success. But now Alex Smith is gone and he's got a much stronger arm than Pat Mahomes, and he's tailoring his game plans to Pat Mahomes, and they're going to have success because Andy Reid can work with obviously pretty much any quarterback you throw at him. So it's fascinating to watch that go down in Kansas City, and it looks like that's going to be a nice long marriage and a nice successful marriage. It makes me feel good about my call about them winning the division this year, because I just looked at the rest of that division and how little – defense was going to be played. You know, I think the Clippers are overrated on D. The Raiders are trash. And the Broncos are good, but not the no-fly zone that they used to be. So I think Kansas City has a chance to stay really, really hot, not just playing defenses like the Steelers, but when they get a hold of their own division. I don't think it's going to stop. I think they're going to keep rolling along, and I think the Chiefs are going to have a really big year.
They'll definitely have a big offensive year. I think they'll find themselves on the wrong side of a few of these high-scoring games because their defense is not very good until they get Eric Berry back. If they're throwing Ron Parker out there, and I highlighted him last year as one of my X-factor players for the Chiefs in the worst kind of way when he was when I actually went to the Pro Football Focus stat, that he was the worst-rated safety in football. And Ben Roethlisberger, I think, must have been following Pro Football Focus, because big part of that comeback, you heard a lot of Ron Parker pushing dudes out of bounds.
Hey, you know the Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers know how to exploit some bad defenses. Even
yes.
If Todd Haley is not there anymore, they still know how to make a comeback on a bad defense.
Yeah, the whole way you can tell that it was Eric Berry who wasn't back there, sort of patrolling on that deep middle. It was most of Ben Roethlisberger's big plays were to Jesse James. It was the tight end who was just completely bending over the Chiefs in that big comeback, and Roethlisberger kept finding him. It was a lot of big plays down the field, and if those were wide receivers that wide open, those are a lot of those plays that a guy getting tackled at 40 yards down the field. A lot of those are going to turn into touchdowns. That's what happened for Tampa. Except
right.
The tight end was also going 75 yards for the touchdown, too. I guess O.J. Howard has a little bit more speed than Jesse James.
That's what the definition of a move tight end is. That's what O.J. Howard was doing. He was moving. That's moving right there.
So that was the big one for me. I know you probably wanted to talk a little bit about the other two as well.
The big one for me was what happened in Jacksonville, because that really did to me feel like the changing of the guard. That really, and of course, you know, picking the Jaguars to win the AFC and go to the Super Bowl, which
yeah.
you did too.
Which we both did, yes.
But of course, it's going to feel like to me like a changing of the guard, because it's basically what I'm predicting to have happen this year, is the Patriots fall off and the Jaguars take their place as sort of the kings of the AFC. But this game is a regular season game. You don't want to put too much stock into it, but coming off of last year's playoff game, coming off of everything that happened in that game with the big lead and collapsing, not trusting their quarterback, coming into this game, you know that the Jaguars would be jacked up for it. You knew that they would be emotionally ready, that they would come out and give the Patriots everything they had. Excuse me, everything they had, and that's exactly what happened. But I think I have to give as much credit as I possibly can to Blake Bortles. I just want to make sure that I give him his proper due. This game was the second game in this market down here, so I watched all of it. And that was not just the terrible Patriots defense coming back from last year. It was there. The Patriots defense was, again, terrible. I do want to say what I saw completely. And I did see some guys that were wide open, not because they were making great moves, but because the Patriots were just not there. Their guys are just not there covering some of the Jaguars receivers. They're just running wide open, running free for no reason at all. The Patriots D is still terrible. I suppose I owe Matt Patricia a little bit of an apology putting this terrible D on his shoulders, because apparently it's not all him, because he's not there anymore. So that's not his fault. So there was a lot of that. But there are also, because multiple things can be true, there were also some fantastic throws by Blake Bortles. And I know I can't believe I'm saying that. There were some great – he made some great throws, some tight windows – some guys on the move that he had to hit in stride, some just strong throws. There was a little bit of everything that Bortles did. And Blake Bortles outplayed Tom Brady, and Blake Bortles beat the New England Patriots, I don't want to say single-handedly, because the defense had a big hand in it too, the way they smothered Tom Brady and the Patriots up. But I got to give my props to Blake Bortles. I don't know if, obviously, I can't say that this is a turning point for him, that he's going to go from here and just be a great NFL quarterback. But he played a great game. He really did. And it wasn't just New England's bad defenders leaving the Jaguars receivers wide open, although there was that too.
And I don't want to oversell this going into week 3. But the reason this sort of, I guess, can say that this feels like a changing of the guard is Jacksonville, granted, we're only going into week 3. But Jacksonville put themselves in a very good position, should it come to it, to have to face New England in their own building again, in the Jags' home. Because you get the one up on them with the tiebreaker, you knock them. So you're basically, Jacksonville, you're already 2 games ahead of the Patriots. And that cannot be undersold when we get late in the season, that the Patriots won't just have to finish with the same record as the Jaguars. They're going to have to finish a game better. And there are not a lot of teams out there, if Jacksonville is playing the way that they're playing, that are going to beat them.
I can't imagine who's going to beat the Jaguars if they keep playing like this.
Yeah.
There's the one drive in particular, the second touchdown for the Jaguars, where they go up 14-0.
Yeah.
Excuse me. That really, to me, had a lot of like moments that made me say, all right, the Jaguars, that kind of reminded me of Renard, they are here for this. They are here for all of this. They were so ready and so productive and doing whatever they needed to do. You had Bortles scramble on 3rd and 6 to make one of the first downs. The New England defenders are just turning, and that time they chose to stick with their receivers, and Bortles is running behind them, and they don't see it at all. He's just running, and nobody's trying to even touch him because they weren't paying any attention. That was the same drive that Keelan Cole went up and snatched the catch with one hand, that very Odell Beckham-like, and it was an amazing catch with one hand, just grabs the end of the football and brings it in like it's nothing. Totally an OMG catch, 22-yarder. Somebody was Corey Grant, some receiver that you never heard of. He was making guys miss on a swing pass. A throw in the middle to the tight end, James O'Shaughnessy, got a big game. And then the home run to Keelan Cole up top for a 24-yard touchdown. And it was like, you name it, the Jags were doing it. They were getting running contribution from T.J. Yeldon all day as well. They did this without Leonard Fournette. They dominated the Patriots in pretty much every way you could imagine. And they did it in a way that, like you already mentioned, if the Patriots come in as a playoff situation, you really don't see a way that the Patriots are going to come out and beat the Jaguars if they're playing like that. And the Patriots tried to mount that kind of comeback again. There was another fourth quarter attempt where the momentum was swinging the Patriots' way, and the Jaguars, give them the credit for doing the exact opposite of what they did in the playoff game. Instead of turtling and trying to hold the lead with all their might, they went out and took the game from the Patriots. They had Bortles continue to deliver throws on time, open receivers, got Niles Paul involved late. They really did take the game from the Patriots. They didn't wait back. They learned their lesson from the playoff game that you have to take these wins from the Patriots. You can't just hope that they let you have them just because you have a lead. So totally a changing of the guard as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you took the point that I was just about to make, was the Jaguars clearly learned from their last matchup. The Jaguars had that AFC championship won, and they let New England come back and take it from them. And you have it precisely right. When it felt like, oh, here come the Patriots, what are the Jags going to do? Then you have Blake Bortles throw a 61-yard touchdown pass. That'll do it.
Yeah, that'll wrap it up.
That would have sent you guys to the Super Bowl. Too bad you didn't try that. Too bad you tried one-yard gain, incomplete pass, punt. It's like six straight times. That was what they did in the AFC Championship game. Here, they actually went out, made the play to win the game and knock out the Patriots. Now, granted, it's easier to do at home, but like I said, they also went a long way towards securing another home date should they have to play the Patriots again.
Yeah, Jaguars were kind of reeling. It was 24-13 after the Patriots got a few points and some stops. But like you said, the Dede Westbrook wide open underneath, and he takes it home up the sideline from 61 yards untouched. Because that's the Patriots' mantra now. Let them go. Just let them go untouched and hope for the best. Boy, I don't know what happened to that defense, but it's been terrible the last few years. All right, so that was the big thing for me. And then I don't know how much more how much we can say about the old man down in Tampa swaggering along and doing whatever he's doing. I said last week it's not going to last. We know better. But and I also said, let's see you do that against an elite pass defense and the defending world champion Eagles. And he did. First play of the game, he took it out and showed it to you and said, what do you think of this? And then goes 75 yards to DeSean Jackson. So, hey, taking it all in, doing his best, living his best life, walking out there in the press conference, looking like Conor McGregor with the jewelry around his neck and the sunglasses and the chest hair showing. Hey, man, Ryan Fitzpatrick, you do you, I guess. So what's going to wind up happening with this situation? Everyone seems to be saying that this is because of these two games, that when Jameis Winston's suspension is up after this third week, that just because he's eligible to play week four doesn't mean he's going to. Apparently, people think this is going to be Fitzpatrick's gig until he loses it.
Yeah, I think Fitzpatrick sort of plays out the string here until, the magic goes away. When he becomes, Brad Fitzjohnson again. When he becomes Brad Fitzjohnson, then the Magic, you know, then they can safely go back to Jameis Winston. As awesome as that passing offense looked, let's not forget that team can't run to save their lives. They are going to get into a situation. This is still turnover Bernie Sanders. He has been very safe with the football so far this season. But this is a guy who will throw the ball into coverage. It's going to happen. So, yes, he may keep – and they've got a really bad defense coming to town. They're playing on Monday night against Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh has got one of the worst defenses.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, Patrick Mahomes just lit them up on the road in Pittsburgh. Now got to go to Tampa to face the other hottest offense in football. So I'm sure, unless, you know, the Fitzmagic wears off, unless all of a sudden the turnovers start coming again, which they can, then yeah, if he goes out there again and lights up Pittsburgh, then definitely. Jameis Winston can sit on the bench for a few weeks.
That would be amazing. That all of that potential talent that they've had down there in Tampa that hasn't done much of anything under Winston, and now this old man from Harvard is going to come swagger in and unlock them and show the world what they're made of. I'm still not buying it long term, but hey, for 2 weeks, he's been the man.
Yeah, they can't bench him. You clearly can't. Now, when he goes back and he does the Nick Foles is getting benched.
Yes.
Yes, because Nick Foles has been fairly pedestrian. He didn't have a terrible game against Tampa Bay, but he didn't have that Ryan Fitzpatrick game. Fact that the elite pass defense of the Philadelphia Eagles gave up 12.2 yards per attempt to Ryan Fitzpatrick tells you how he is feeling it right now.
400 yards, second game in a row.
Yeah. So you can't bench a guy who's doing that, can you?
I guess you can't. We've got some more to talk about for week two. We'll get to that in the after show. Right now we have to pick tomorrow night's game, even though neither one of us really wants to. But we'll do it anyway because we pick them all. The New York Jets and the Cleveland Browns are playing on Thursday night football. Why? Oh, why? At least the Browns won't have Zane Gonzalez to kick around anymore. I didn't do this earlier during the show, but Daniel Carlson and Zane Gonzalez will play the music for them. May they rest in peace. In any event, Sam Darnold, the rookie quarterback for the Jets, going against Tyrod Taylor for the Cleveland Browns. And people, I think, believe that this is the chance for the Cleveland Browns to finally get a win because they are actually favored over somebody. They haven't won a game in so long, in over two seasons, basically. But the Jets are the Skyfowl Line 3-point dogs at the dog pound at the Cleveland Browns. Jason, who you got?
I mean, this is it, right? This is it. This is it. This is the matchup. This is the Jets. They stink. They're going to Cleveland. Cleveland's going to get that first win. But I can't take the Browns as a favorite. I just can't do it. Give me the Jets. There's something wrong. I can't do it until they show me. I mean, I can take them as big dogs. Clearly, they can step up as the big dog. But the favorite at home? I'm not falling for that one. I'll take the Jets.
It does feel like a trap. I'll admit that. But I don't know. It's the Jets, man.
It's a trap.
That's the tough thing about it. If you don't take the Browns, then you got to go with the Jets on the road with a rookie quarterback on a short week, and that doesn't feel too good either.
Push.
So I'm gonna actually take. I'm going to take the Brown Fever and give it to 3. I think they come out fired up because they know that this is their chance as well, and they give it every single bit that they have and come through and get this win. More on our after show when we come back. Come through for me, Browns. Come on. Come on, dog pal. Come through for me. All right, into the VIP after show program. I'm going to feel sick with either result, the Jets or the Browns.
This would be a push.
That is the perfect solution. That is the outcome that feels the most right, is the Jets win 10-7, or I'm sorry, the Browns win 10-7 or something like that.
Yeah, 10-7. Yuck.
Do you see a ton of offense in this game? I think the under is a safe play.
Yeah, 3-0.
I don't know about quite that under, but yeah, it does feel like one of those games that makes you want to like question why you watch football ever at all.
Yeah, and again, I just can't take the Browns just because something just doesn't feel right. But this is their primetime game. This is it, right? I mean, they can't get another one. So if they don't come out playing like this is their Super Bowl,
right?
And you know, and maybe they just come out and just stomp the living piss out of the Jets. I would love to see that, because then they'd be like, okay, those first 2 weeks weren't just flukes, and you guys are really, you know, a better team. Like I expected them to be this year. I thought they could win 5 games this year. They should have won 2 already.
Yes, they should have. Very easily could have.
You know, but you didn't, and that's the point. The point is they still don't know how to handle, you know, gifts and luxury and being in that position to win games. And so, I don't know, you just until they can just prove they're not snake bit, because by all rights, they should probably just go out there tomorrow and just stop the Jets. They should. But I don't know. I want to see it.
No, like with
the Cardinals, right? We were going to give the Cardinals their one last chance, and, well, they blew it. So they're done, right? So now I'm giving Cleveland that chance to blow it, and if they don't blow it, all right. Maybe I'll have a little Brown Fever.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much why I'm going with them, because they should come out and stomp the Jets, because they know that's their Super Bowl. I think we both see the same thing. You just are afraid to pull the trigger, because it's how can you pull the trigger on a team that's favored
to win,
is
on
that hasn't
side.
Won
yeah.
in the last 18 or 19 yeah. football games?
History's on my side here.
Yes, it is. The thing about recapping the rest of week 2 for you is, I don't know how much else you could have possibly caught. You were preoccupied this weekend
yeah.
with the game, and also some QT with the wife after that. So
yeah.
I don't know how much else you saw. I was preoccupied because Sunday night, my wife had to go to the hospital again, but they, so I didn't see any of the Giants
yeah.
and Cowboys. I was dreading having to see the slurp fest of Sean Lee anyway, but I wound up seeing 0 seconds of it. So I don't know anything about it. I saw the highlights, and I saw that Eli Manning had no time to do anything. That's about all I saw about that.
Yeah. The Giants offense it still stinks. So
yeah,
that's all you needed to see about that one. No, I wanted to talk for a minute about my Falcons. You were right on there. I mean, we both had them winning. I just didn't have them covering. You had them covering, you know, and it was a 6-point spread. They won by 7. But clearly the blueprint for them is very visible with what they're trying to do, and that is run the ball. Tevin Coleman went out and had himself one hell of a ball game, because that team blocks. That's not a team with a terrible offensive line. That's a team that can actually block, and they can run block very well. So you can just put guys back there. And every time, either Tevin Coleman or Ito Smith or whoever the hell they gave the ball to, they got chunk yards. And they had nice big runs. And it was very impressive to then watch the Falcons operate with the play-action game. That's their game. And they were able to run that with precision against Carolina. And I saw multiple times, not just the touchdown catch, but several other times, two or three more times underneath, wide open, the way they're going to use Calvin Ridley in this offense. As they are running Julio Jones deep to pull the defense with him, and Calvin Ridley was sitting down underneath some zones with nobody within 10 yards of him and making some huge plays. So I liked what I saw. And then they would run the exact same thing with Austin Hooper. So clearly a lot of play action, softening up that middle, running Julio Jones out there with two guys going after him. This is clearly going to be their blueprint and their game plan. And Matt Ryan must have gotten fed up with all that lack of play in the red zone, because he decided he was going to start taking it in himself.
Yeah, way to go. Bust up the red zone by your damn self. Don't wait for anybody else.
Yeah.
Way to go, Matty Ice.
But it was even though their defense, I still worry for their defense, because they just got guys. They're losing people left and right in that defense. It's just one after the other now. But the offense clearly is not as bad as they looked one. And then again, week one, what do you really take away from week one? It's preseason football, and the quality wasn't there. And then they went home and they got right, and they played a very good team in Carolina, not a terrible team, and took care of business. And then that offense really looked good.
One of your defenders took himself out of the game because he decided to be the football version of the hockey goon. Because Devontae KZ,
oh, yeah, that was Devontae
went
KZ
in there.
Yeah, the guy I was talking up.
Yeah.
He pulled a Bob Probert.
He really did. He went in and tried to end Cam Newton's career, or
yeah,
maybe even his life. Complete spear job on the guy as he's sliding. I mean, about as dirty as it gets. So at least he didn't get.
Do you know what he
didn't get
do?
Taken out by injury.
Do you know what he didn't do?
What's that?
He didn't retire at halftime.
He didn't just up and quit the team right there at halftime. He did not do that. That's true. That's a new one. That's the face when your team sucks so hard that you just quit at halftime. I've had it. You guys
he got
are
up and he
terrible.
Gave his, he got up and he gave his halftime speech.
Now I'm done.
Where did Vontae Davis go? He had to go somewhere else. He had to leave. What? We still got a game to play. You know, he had to go. He really had to go. Like, gone, like completely gone. You know, and did you see the fact that he released a very well prepared statement right after quitting?
Like
right after the spontaneous quitting on the spot there. Very well prepared.
I don't think he wrote that at halftime.
You wouldn't think so. No, it's almost like he was kind of thinking about this leading up to it.
Yeah.
It's almost like it wasn't quite so spontaneous. And then things that make you go, just saying.
This is how it's gone for this. This is how it is for the Buffalo Bills.
This is Buffalo Bills football. A project, a quarterback, and a guy quits your team at the half. Ooh. Well, you declared him done, and guess what? Someone quit on the team literally at halftime. So you may have been as accurate calling somebody a mail-it-in team, because no one has ever mailed it in as hard as Vontae Davis quitting on his team at halftime. That is legendary.
I have a feeling someone, one of the two of us, or both, he's getting some kind of an award from us this year.
It feels like some sort of award. It feels like a very infamous act, if you know what I mean. It feels
retire at half. I mean, we talk about it. We joke about that.
He did it.
I give the man full credit. And he didn't get hurt. It wasn't like he blew out his knee and said he was done. He just realized that he was playing for one of what may be one of the worst teams of all time.
And just said, you know what? I don't need this.
Yeah. So
I really don't.
So good luck. Good luck to Vontae Davis in his future endeavors.
Wow.
He just upped and retired at halftime.
That is a new one. I wanted to relay a little bit of my experience as far as a fan interacting with other fans, other football fans. A little bit of a look into the psyche, real quick, nothing major, but just going to the hospital with my wife. Like I said, I hadn't watched any of the Cowboys-Giants game. The timing of us going was we left here maybe they had just started and got there and we're sitting in the waiting room and then went back there for a little while when they finally called her her name. And by the time they put her in a room, started putting some fluids into her, and she's fine. She was feeling a little like a rapid heartbeat and a little dehydrated, had a fever, but they gave her some fluids and sent her on her way, so she didn't have to stay the whole night. But they did put her in a room for a little while and gave her some fluids. But while she's in that room, it's about the time that the game ended, and so I hear some people out in the hallway that apparently are Cowboys fans and talking about, yeah, the Cowboys won. And I just heard one of them say, yeah, they finally won. The Cowboys finally won. Can you believe it?
Week two?
It's week two. The Cowboys finally won because they lost week one. So apparently the whole season is over. So the Cowboys finally won because they won week two. So that was stunning enough. Then I get to work the next day, or actually Tuesday, and my boss, who happens to be a big Cowboys fan, so Monday night, of course, was the Bears beating up on the Seahawks, and my boss knows that I'm from Chicago and I'm a Bears fan. So Tuesday, my boss comes in, slaps me on the back and says, hey, saw last night. See, your Bears finally won. And I'm like, wait, what? It's week two. What the hell is going on? I guess every I guess every team that loses a game in week one or ties or whatever is thought to be that is the epitome of fan overreaction theater. That a team wins a game in week two after not winning in week one and is called finally won. Could you imagine if we did that in every sport? That in baseball, the team that loses on opening day, they come back the next day and they finally won a game. After losing the first game, they finally come back. I've never had heard of anything like that, but interacting with a couple of different fan bases, and maybe it's the fact that it was Cowboys fans on both ends that were doing that, because maybe it's unusual. Maybe that doesn't happen with other fan bases. Maybe the Cowboys are that arrogant and that spoiled that they think they should win every game and that every other team should win every game, and that if you lose in week one, then that's just horrible, and when you win in week two, oh, you finally won. But I'd never heard of that before these two incidents. So that's dealing with some fandom out there that's very unusual to me.
Yeah, that's a new one.
Never heard of that.
Yeah. I mean, granted, they lost in a tough way, the Bears did, in week one. I mean, that was a hard one. But
to say they finally won because they came back in week two, what? You say finally won for a team that hadn't won in weeks. Or
like if the
like
Browns
that
win tomorrow night, they finally won.
That is finally won. That is
not an overreaction.
Like Trump was almost not president, right? The last time they won, or was it before he got in office?
Boy.
It's been a while. It's been a long time since the Browns won a game.
Yeah. You know, and it's sad because they probably should have won. They had three or four games sewn up last year, or games that they were competitive in where had, you know, field goals they could have kicked to win it, or big leads that they blew. So tomorrow might be the day. Might be the one. They finally win a game. But that would be the correct usage of that term.
Yeah, I'm thinking back to the last time. Obama had not left office yet. That's how long it's been. So that is finally won.
Yeah.
Win. Maddie, you talked about Matty Ice busting up the red zone Hex by himself and the Falcons coming through. That also, I was just noting, that may be a function of playing a defense other than Philadelphia, because as good as the Panthers are, they're not the Eagles. So maybe the red zone thing that the Falcons are going through, because remember the last two games before Carolina were both against the Eagles, the playoff game last year and the first regular season game of this year.
We talked a little bit about that in our recap of the Thursday night game. It's like maybe the Eagles just have their number, right? Maybe they just scheme up, right? Maybe they match up well against the Falcons, but because that was a totally different Falcons effort last Sunday.
Absolutely. I think it's time for John Gruden to start blaming somebody for what's going on here. It's so funny that he keeps coming out almost every day talking about how badly the Raiders need a pass rush to try to compete in these games.
Yeah.
Dude, time for you to get a mirror.
Again, they didn't need to trade Khalil Mack. They didn't have to. They would have gotten nothing for him if they made the decision as a franchise to not re-sign him and let him walk. Or they could have at least, like, can't you put, like, a transition tag on somebody or get some compensation or do something? Or wait till the trade deadline. I know nobody does this in football, but maybe see what you got with them and then trade them week 4 or week 5.
Yeah, I believe he had 3 years of control left. So, yeah, they didn't have to do anything.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't get it at all.
Or they could just pay him what he's worth. Because, again, how many guys like that are you going to come across? So you finally get one and you decide, not worth the money.
Again.
Like, really?
Let's hold off some judgment until the Bears play a team that actually fields an offensive line.
Fair enough. So I did watch some of the Titans game down here against the Texans and lost.
That was the only game I had on you going into Sunday night.
Yeah, Tennessee, we talked about how if you had two quarterbacks, you don't have any. Well, they had three, so I guess that made all the difference because they had
Kevin
Byard throwing a touchdown pass on a fake punt.
That was a beautiful throw.
This is a wide open. The gunners are left wide open, and it's on him to take that shot, and he took it. And someone named Dane Cruikshank was completely wide open and caught the little shot put pass out there. Yeah, it was. He could have gagged and threw it out of bounds or short hopped it or something like that. So
this is
give Byard
right.
Right.
Give him
credit for doing something that he's completely not trained to do, and it's not his job at all, but he got it out there. They even had Derrick Henry out of the Wildcat. I guess technically his 8-yard pass was a pass because he did one of those where he catches the snap and the guy is running a jet sweep going past him and he kind of flips it to him. So it's technically a forward pass. So they got they got no throws out of Marcus Mariota, but they got a pass from Derrick Henry and a pass from Kevin Byard. And I guess it made all the difference. So Tennessee, they've got a lot of razzle dazzle trying to jazz up their offense a little bit. So it's good to see that they're trying some different things, trying something new with the special teams. Usually it's the Colts coming in and embarrassing the Titans on special teams. I remember many different fake punts for touchdowns that the Colts would pull off. So maybe the Titans are the ones that are going to be pulling that type of stuff off now. But, they still won. And the other thing that I observed on that game, Deshaun Watson, he's still an infant. In as far as football goes, this is only his 7th game that he played on Sunday at Tennessee, only his 6th start ever.
Yeah.
So he's holding onto the ball way too long. He's waiting for things to develop that aren't there and not making the decision to either throw it away or take, pull it down and take off and start running. He's still making those mistakes. He's seemingly afraid to make a mistake downfield, but he's still a kid as far as that goes. So I think it's understandable, and I still think the world of his athletic ability and his talent, and I still think that the Texans in the long run are going to have a lot of success under him. But there's a lot of criticism out there about. Some of the mistakes that he made, specifically the end of this game against the Titans, where
They had, you cannot dance around left. For 17 seconds.
And he just completely danced around and ran the clock all the way down.
And it didn't even throw the ball to the end zone. Threw the ball to the middle of the field with no timeout. I didn't. The announcers didn't. Nobody understood that play. Only Deshaun Watson understood what he was doing.
Well, what he was doing was sort of panicking. And I guess my point was that happens. It was his seventh game. It was his sixth start. It's, you know, the expectations because of those incredible games that he had last year, he made the expectations on him sky high. And I get it, but you got to have a little slack because he's so young and he's still in his infancy. He did get picked off when he finally did take a deep shot in the game for Nuke Hopkins, but even that was not really him making a huge mistake. That was Adoree Jackson went up and mossed him.
Yeah.
When you go up and grab the ball from over the guy's head, that's called getting mossed now. So that's cool that Randy Moss is that much of an icon that he's got a move named after him, because we remember him going up over cornerbacks' heads and just taking a ball from them like they're a baby.
Yeah.
So that's good. But, you know, I don't know if you had heard about this part either as far as the criticism of Deshaun Watson, but the social media, the bane of your existence, as you say, is just the worst thing in the world, and I understand
it is,
why
it's
you
the lowest, say that sometimes. It's the lowest common denominator of everything, but that's okay.
Some grade school superintendent down in Houston put out there on his Facebook page for all the world to see, I'm sure before he took it down, that you should not expect Deshaun Watson to be able to make those kind of plays and make those decisions at the end of the games, because you can't rely on a black quarterback to be smart enough to make those decisions. And it's like, wow, it's 2018 and we still got Rush Limbaugh disciples out here trying to basically say that the league is desirous to have a black quarterback succeed. That's basically what he was saying by saying something like that. So it's unbelievable that you still have some shit like that out there.
Well, okay. Unbelievable to who? I don't know. It's not unbelievable to me that there's one random idiot in a world of social media who can post something stupid on Twitter. And now at least we can talk about it and go, wow, we could sort of do this like outrage society thing and go, I can't believe it. Yeah, I can believe it. This world is full of dumbasses.
And your point is that with social media, there's just more opportunity for them to show
Correct.
Their dumbassery.
If we didn't have Twitter, if we didn't have Facebook, this guy would still be stupid. He would still say these things. He would just say them to people who agree with him, or he would be like the drunk uncle at Thanksgiving that nobody pays any attention to, just says a bunch of racist shit, and he's like, okay, yeah, he's just don't talk to Grandpa, he's had a few too many to drink. But now, because of social media and Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all it takes is one person to say something stupid, and Twitter explodes, and now you can get three or four like C-list celebrities to respond to that and like, oh, look, I punked you. And oh my God, this is, so you're falling into the trap. And again, the whole, I can't believe. Now, if he posted this,
it's a trap.
If he posted this and got 3 million likes, okay, that's a different story. But no, the world's just full of stupid people.
I guess the part that I don't believe is all the blowback that you see other people get for saying stuff like that. And then you go and say it like, you, how dumb can you be? And you're a superintendent of schools and you don't think this is ever going to get out to anybody at all. Like, really? So that's the part that I guess
in the world.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I don't pretend to, I'm not fueled by the outrage victim society that everything is, oh my God, I can't believe. Yeah, no, I absolutely believe that.
No, I
think it's stupid. I don't agree with it. That's not how, it's not how I think, but can I accept the fact that there are people that think that way and they're stupid? Absolutely. There are dumb, dumb people in this world. I work with the public.
I really am left speechless sometimes by some of these people. Like, how do you justify typing those type of things in and hitting enter. Like, how do you even think that that's okay?
Yeah. Right. I mean, but that's no different than when you say, well, don't give me that, well, you should have known better business. Now you're giving me the you should have known better business. You know, like, the kid who retweets rap lyrics or something. You know, I was like, okay, yeah, you should know better.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing.
We can't just vote this guy off the island. Goodbye. No, you do exactly what should be done. You look at the guy, you point, you laugh, you ridicule, you mock. Wow, you're stupid. And he gets exactly what he deserves.
I guess that's about the only way. I am not
operating under a delusion that we are going to change people overnight. This is all pretty new, right? Right. This whole society that we live in with all of the access to everything. I mean, this is all within what, last 10 years?
10 or 15 years?
Yeah. I mean, we're just really sort of gone into overdrive. That's even more recent. That's maybe within the last 5 or 6 years where it's just gone in, nuts. I mean, I can think back, okay, you go back 10 years and you had like MySpace or something like that,
Right. Everybody had a blog.
Yeah. But it wasn't like where you could just pull out your phone and, drop some Twitter bomb or drop something or say something really ridiculous. You couldn't just do that 10 years ago the way you can do it now. And if you could, you had a lot of money.
I still remember when Twitter first, when I first heard of the concept of Twitter, I called it blogging for idiots because you only had 120,
you were right.
140 characters. I guess I was.
You were right. Because now it's just, and I use it the same way. I just try to say the most snarky thing I can in 150 characters. Because you're not going to go, you can't go real deep, right? You can't get into a lot of depth. So you can't really,
Well, you can, but that's called a thread, and that's basically a blog post.
Yeah, right. But then it would be, in the day of Twitter, if I see the wall of text, I'm like, oh, I'm not reading that. TLDR.
I'm so unhip that I literally just learned today what TLDR meant. I had
too
no
long,
idea.
Didn't read.
I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah.
I've seen that, but
I can remember being on forums, sports forums, video game forums, and somebody would just be rage typing like this 4-paragraph thing.
And oh, like Jimbo in our
chunk.
Sandbox.
Yeah. So this just giant chunk. And then the very first post to that's always TLDR. just to make it worse.
Yeah.
That's what you get with stuff like that. So we always keep it topical though. But no, yeah, I mean, I know we wish that people didn't say things stupid like that. And that there wasn't that just that, whether it's about race or anything, that somebody's like, wow, Deshaun Watson's going to make bad decisions because he's one of them Negroes. Huh?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. When Deshaun Watson is dancing around in the pocket, right, and he's looking for a receiver down the field, it has zero to do with the amount of pigment in his skin.
And just the thought of what Russell Wilson has done in winning a title and what Cam Newton did winning an MVP and what Pat Mahomes is doing right now, like it doesn't matter. Like he's one of those guys that obviously just takes everything that would go against his point and just ignores that and throws it out because it doesn't suit his narrative. And there's so many people like that out there that, mm-hmm. yeah, I would go crazy trying to get mad or outraged over all of them. But something like that, I think makes news because of the fact that it's like a school superintendent, and he made these statements publicly. So that's the only thing. Because I'm sure there were probably millions of people on Twitter saying similar things about Deshaun Watson, but because they're not, you know, of any importance, then we don't find out about
him. This guy's not of any importance. He's in a position where he shouldn't be saying those things, but he's not like he's an important guy. Maybe it is in his community, but not in the point where you now know who he is and what he said.
I guess he's important enough that, yes, I'll say that he should have known better.
Yes, he should definitely have known better. Keep that to yourself. Keep your damn dirty racism to yourself, people.
Oh, if only we could. And other ignorant thoughts as well, of course. So what else about
week? We have plenty of those.
Yeah. So what else about week two stood out to you? We tried to avoid the overreaction theater with our picks, and I think we did a pretty good job of that in general. Now it's going to be week three. Do we react or overreact to the first 2 weeks? Because
that's why I'm trying not to with my pick tomorrow night, because all signs would sort of point towards picking the Browns, and I'm trying not to react. I am not trying to react to the fact, to the point that they almost won football games. I think I'm picking against them because they almost won football games.
And now we're expecting them to not just win, but win by more than a field goal.
Right. Now they're favorites. So they've shown us enough by choking like the dogs that they are that they deserve to be the favorites. Against a team that went on the road and just beat the living crap out of the Detroit Lions, and then last week looked pretty terrible. So the Jets are 1-1, and it's been this is what you get with a rookie quarterback, right? You're going to get the high points and the low points, but they at least had a higher high than the Browns have had. They won a game.
That they did.
Yeah, in convincing fashion.
Yeah, but how much did
Lions, the Lions are pretty bad.
But I was just about to say, but what did that say about Detroit, though, the way that they whooped their ass?
Yeah, well, the Lions got you a fairly cheap cover against the 49ers.
They had to mount a comeback of their own to do that. And the funniest part about that was that comeback by Matthew Stafford actually – I needed that to win my fantasy matchup this week. So I needed Detroit to come back and do something. I'm just looking at the results of that game. I'm not watching that game itself, but I'm looking at the updates and the scores and the fantasy updates. And I'm just like, come on, Stafford, give me something, do something. Cause as I think I mentioned on the show, my two fantasy quarterbacks this year that I didn't go up in the early top of the draft and get a quarterback like Rodgers or Breeze or Brady or anything like that. I waited back a little bit and I decided to take two veterans and I'll just mix and match them and play the matchups. So the veterans that I took were Matthew Stafford and Matt Ryan. And this week I benched Matt Ryan and his two touchdowns and two rushing touchdowns.
Oh.
And so I'm watching that second game going, Stafford, you got to do this for me, because if you don't, I'm going to feel so stupid for leaving Matt Ryan on the bench. But thankfully, Stafford came through for me late.
Should have drafted Ryan Fitzpatrick.
I guess so. So should
or
everyone
Patrick
else
Mahomes.
In my league. Yeah, I don't know if he's owned or not. I know Fitzpatrick wasn't owned these last 2 weeks because, so everyone passed on him, but someone just picked him up today. You
of
know
course,
what that means.
Overreaction theater.
But nobody overreacted to that first game against the Saints. They're like, okay,
well,
whatever.
Playing, because they were playing the Eagles.
And now he did it against the Eagles.
We
like,
didn't believe either. See, we didn't believe either.
Now it's
like, yeah, let's see you do that against the best pass defense. Oh, shit.
He did. Just went right down the field on him. All right. Well,
no, that's about all I had. I think I could call it a night.
Yeah, I guess I don't really have much of anything to add either. I don't care about the Colts beating the Redskins. I told you the Redskins are trash.
They'll be up and down.
I think they'll be mostly down.
They got the Packers this week. They're one Aaron Rodgers knee twist away from winning that game.
So were the Bears and the Vikings.
He's just going to shove this up your ass all year.
All year long, hobbling the whole way.
He'll stick around just long enough to screw the Bears out of something. Like the Bears will miss the playoffs because of Aaron Rodgers.
I tweeted about that play.
Then he'll be done. I have done my work. I can go.
I tweeted about that one, but like I said, the one that he took off and ran for first down looked like he was carrying a piano on his back, and then comes back and gives a handoff and like almost falls down because his knee is so ouchy from running like that. And I'm like, oh, he's gonna leave the game soon. I just knew he was gonna be finished after that. But he kept hanging out.
He almost stuck around long enough to beat your lock of the week.
He should have with that field goal at the end. He should have actually. So I'm still give him all the credit. I'm still in awe of what he's doing out there. I still just wonder how long he's going to do it.
So I am looking at the week here, and I should be okay for Saturday again. I know that's your preferred day for picks, and I should be just fine for Saturday.
That sounds great to me. That's definitely what I aim for. Yeah, we're actually in trying to get into a bit of a rhythm anyway. We're around here where Friday nights will be our sort of social night, and I'm sure you and your wife probably try to do something similar. So yeah, I'm trying to keep that night free as well to spend some time with the wife, and then Saturday will be the picks show.
Yeah. Okay, I'll be ready. As ready as I usually am.
Hey, your minimalist research such as it is, you're always pretty much as good as I am picking these things. So, you know, whatever works for everybody, different strokes for different folks. And that's what makes the show work. We give our opinions, however they're based, and let you make the decision. And we just go from there. That's pretty much all we can do. I just do a lot more looking into mine because not because it makes me more prepared necessarily, but because I don't feel right if I don't do more investigating and looking into some of these numbers. You know, if I pick a game where the one defense is really terrible and I should have known that by looking up the numbers and I didn't look, then it would be just driving me crazy. Like, oh, I should have seen that. I should have known that so-and-so's defense was awful. But so that's why I do what I do. But either way, we're still having fun and we're still doing our thing. What's going on with the baseball races? They're pretty much winding down, and I guess the NL wild card is still up for grabs.
Yeah. Well, what, Cubs and Brewers are 2.5 apart, and that's probably the only division that's really still somewhat compelling. So, you know, but otherwise, baseball is baseball.
Baseball.
You know, playoffs will be starting, 2 weeks? 2 weeks.
Yeah. The Rockies are still hanging around, and I believe the Red Sox are about to clinch over the Yankees, but that was pretty much sewn up for a while now. But I think the Yankees are still in there for the wild card. So, yeah, that all shakes down, I suppose.
Yeah, it's going to be Yankees-A's in the wild card game. It's shaping up like.
I know you're looking forward to that because you're bashing A's.
They'll probably lose, but they're fun.
Yeah, they slug away.
That was my one preseason thing that I can really like hold my hat on. Like, wow. I was on the A's. Who else was on the A's before the season even started? I was also on the Royals. We're going to not talk about that. I was on the A's, and that's what counts.
I wasn't going to bring up Kansas City. I was not going to bring that up at all. All right. All right. We're both sleepy and loogie and had long days, so we're going to get out of here.
All right.
He is Jay. I am Dre. This has been in much less detail the podcast. You being the host tonight, did you want to play us out?
Oh yeah, I will here. Oh man, why are you putting me? You putting all the pressure on me here? Well, I have to play. I have to play this for Vontae Davis.
Uh oh.
Now that he's on his way out, we'll play him out. He gets to go spend all his money.
Everybody's got a price. Everybody's gonna pay. There's a $1 million man. Cost a little. Some might cost a lot. But I'm the $1 million man. And you will